Sport with our commentator, Sam Ackerman. Sam, your list is so long and interesting, I'm not quite sure where to start. But the question of whether athletes should be able to skip MIQ, I think, is an interesting one. I was listening this morning to Morning Report, and they had a clip of Paige Harib, who's a professional surfer, agonising over the fact that she's had to decide not to go overseas because she can't have any guarantee of coming home, and just the impact, the stress that is having on her, and on her professional life and her personal life. So it's very complicated.
Yeah, take Paige as a great example of it, Linda. She is a she has been at one stage New Zealand's poster girl for the sport, and everyone was excited about her arrival on the international and the professional circuit. Really important for surf culture to have someone of that level there. It really does so much to promote the surf sport to people, and people can get behind it. But Paige is on the verge of being able to get herself back into that professional environment at that top tier, but she can't do it without competing. It's not cheap, it's not easy, and a lot of sacrifices had to be made for her and countless other sports people from this country to be able to go put themselves on the international stage. It's rare that these sports come here, come to us. We really need them to go take those steps. But if they don't, we don't have those breakthrough moments like we had with Paul Cole winning the British Open, Squash Open, just a few weeks ago. It takes a lot of dedication. We don't get Olympic champions in sports like shot put for staying put on our back door, do we? It involves getting out there and testing yourself against the best and growing. And they aren't particularly well-funded sports. They don't have professional backing like the All Blacks, where there's a large pool of money to take care of them and pay their way and the like. So to go there and do these things, it's not just a case of going, great, I'll go for a couple of weeks, get this competition underway, then come home. You can go there and then you're stuck there for 7 weeks. Now, they're representing New Zealand, putting us, our interest and our flag, hopefully on podiums and making news bulletins around the world when you achieve things. It is a big deal for them to be able to do that. And it's an important part of who we are. We take great pride in that. And we will always revel in their successes. But are we prepared to make that sacrifice, if you like, with MIQ? Because everyone knows anyone overseas who's New Zealander should be able to come back. We all want them to be able to come back at a reasonable rate, to be able to see their family, to be part of their life back here. But we also know what MIQ means and why it's there. It's a really complex issue. The concept of allowing sports people to skip MIQ and to self-isolate at home is a really interesting one. And for those who are concerned about the vaccination situation, most of them will be fully vaccinated. For those who are concerned about, what about what they could do for spreading it? Well, the argument is a lot of these athletes are disciplined enough to know that there's no need to go down the road to grab yourself a burger and put yourself at risk of not being able to go back to your next tournament, not to mention the impact on society. I'm for it, Lynn. I support it. But I don't want it to be a sports person situation. I think it needs to be a situation where those representing this country, whether that be in performance, we're talking performing arts, we're talking musicians, we're talking artists, we're talking those in the business realm that say need to go to somewhere in Asia to get a kiwi fruit deal that'll keep hundreds, thousands of people in work here. There's so many factors to take in place. If we make it just sports people, I was in a conversation with a veteran writer called Richard Nola just earlier today, where he was pointing out very fairly as well that this will become a political football, and there'll be those who will use it to point score one way or the other, whether it's winning support by bagging these people and saying, what about everyday New Zealanders? Or those who want to butter up the athlete side of things and go to the sporting complex. Either way, it becomes something that's divisive. It needs to be a really clear indication from the government on how that would be possible. They haven't given any indication they want to do it, but we need to start thinking about what is allowing New Zealanders to be able to succeed on the world stage. Obviously, we're talking this context sport, but beyond that, by allowing those opportunities like cutting through the red tape. I mean, how can anyone who's on a budget go there to perform an event like that, taking that money out of their own pocket, trying to lure sponsors, and then get there, be told they can't come back for 7 weeks? And when they do, they're staying in MIQ for 2 weeks, which they're paying for as well. So few of these athletes are on the bones of their backsides for quite a few of them to get to where they want to be. They're saving money and dedicating everything to make their sport work for them. It means sleeping on couches when they're overseas. It means cutting every corner you can on cost to make performance your priority. It's a really messy situation.
It is difficult. I think the other thing, of course, Sam, is that, I mean, a lot of people are making a lot of sacrifices. And is that a bigger sacrifice than not being able to go overseas to see a parent who's dying? I mean, this is where it starts to become really tricky. 100%. And if you make an exception for one group, we're starting to get feedback in now. So this texter says, athletes must not be allowed MIQ-free entry. Their occupation is too risky for us, and sport isn't important enough for us to risk our lives for. And I guess that's the concern around the Delta variant. You can be 100%. Vaccinated, you can still spread it. And it doesn't take much for it to get into the community. So do you think the government would consider making this kind of exemption?
I think they need to, I want to make it really clear. It's a very good point brought up by that texter. But the point is, I'm not saying athletes need this dispensation. I say we need to. Athletes are an example of those we need to consider on what this means for our. They are essentially a marketing tool around the country around the world as well. Having them out there is an important part of pushing the New Zealand brand. And we as a country, when we're in lockdown and have very few things to feel happy and supportive of, how many people do you think get a buzz when they're in a situation like they're in now, where they feel like their life is on hold, if you like, to see that they've got the All Blacks to watch that weekend? It may not be for everybody, absolutely, but for many, it's a distraction. It's something they can take pride in. It's a tricky situation. They're not going to solve everyone's problems with this, and there'll be no complete consensus. But we are looking at athletes ending their careers, or at least having to put them on ice for a long period of time during their prime, and not being able to go and fulfil their potential, which we as a country have taken so much pride on. Take a look at the Olympics just been. If you've got any sense of pride and felt better as a New Zealander about somebody winning the Olympic medal there, know the sacrifice they made to get there. And yes, there has been some funding, not as much as you'd hope for or think, to go overseas and compete and lift yourself to that level. So I see the argument for it, and I understand everyone being nervous about MIQ being skipped or given an exemption. And you're right, I feel exactly the same way about, say, those visiting a dying relative or having very fair reasons to want to leave and come back. But we need to start addressing it. I think a blanket rule, I don't see that system personally working great in the long term.
The Warriors have had a different situation, haven't they? They effectively have moved to Australia, and that's for a team. It's still a huge sacrifice, but for a team, it's slightly easier for them to make that decision. What impact do you think it has had on them, and is it a good model?
Well, it's worth looking at, that's for sure. So the Warriors haven't played at home since 2019. So there's been no games played in New Zealand. So their identity as the Warriors is based purely now on an emblem. As it stands, they aren't a team that represents this region in its purest sense. So they've been based over there. They haven't been able to come back to play any football, and they've had very limited, very small window to come back in the last off-season, but they've been based out of there. These are athletes and families that don't know how they're getting home right now. So they will be based, they've announced this week, in Redcliffe in Queensland. They're breaking the model of the past 2 years where they've all stayed in shared accommodation. They're now resigned to this fact. They've said, we're going to be based in this area. So everyone with their families can come over here, rent their own houses now, and this will be home next year. That's where home will be. That's already been determined. They're hoping to come back for a few hit and run games here and there if the current levels and the bubbles allow it. But let's be honest, who knows if that's going to be achievable or possible, given the NRL will make the deciding factors on that more so than the New Zealand club or the New Zealand government. So it's a tricky situation where they are now disconnected from it. They can keep competing, and they are there, and they're making those sacrifices. It's a very different situation to those who need to go and compete somewhere and kind of come back. They are also obviously being paid while they're there. Their money that they're spending on accommodation comes out of a wage that they are paid, and paid well, we should say, as a professional sporting organisation for most of them. So rather than pay mortgage or rent here, they will be paying mortgage or rent over there. They might have both, but of course, there's mitigating factors. That's a good model to go from, but it's not achievable in every other context, unless we're going to say we're going to set up a sporting basis for New Zealand athletes in places. Now, that'll be hard to fund and hard to back up. But it set its toll on the Warriors. They haven't performed particularly well, and those who aren't Warriors fans will say, well, what's the difference from before? But the team has really been considered by those in the NRL and many in the sporting fraternity here, of those who are the leaders and the sacrifice that's needed to be made. And it's been tough for them. It's been they are now a team that doesn't contain as many players. The team that left is not the team that's playing there now. Many have moved on or come home or done something that gets them in a situation where they're no longer part of that Warriors setup. It's hard for that for fans to identify with a team that they never get to see in the flesh as well. So it all adds up, Lynn.
That wasn't a great last performance for them, was it?
It was terrible. Mm. And I'm not just talking football. The attitude of the team in that game was... I've supported rugby league since the very early 90s, and I've seen a lot of Warriors performances that are below par. That, to me, was one of the most disappointing and, frankly, embarrassing performance I've seen from the Warriors. I always will say that no team goes out there to lose. Every team goes out there and gives what they have, and sometimes it's good enough and sometimes it's not. That was just a poor attitude performance. We saw three players put in the sin bin within minutes of each other. Some pretty just ugly, stupid stuff that doesn't sit well with the fans, because look, league fans, and let's be fair, a lot of sports fans don't mind a bit of biff and don't mind a bit of aggro. And it's good. You need aggressive players in there. But the players we're talking about here are two Australian players by the name of Kane Evans and Matt Lodge, who's a very controversial player with his past involving assault in New York, where many question whether he should be allowed into the NRL again at all. He was throwing fisticuffs and he walked off not just embarrassed, but he started flipping the bird to the crowd as well. Now, for a guy with his reputation that he's been trying to rehab for years now, it's dumb. It's not just silly, it's dumb, and it's embarrassing for the club. So they need to start looking at how they ensure that the culture they left with is the culture that's put over there. They've got a lot of smart people who you've got a lot of time for in the Warriors, including the CEO, Cameron George. So there's some very good people involved. But keeping that culture on the field when they've gone through three coaches while they've been over there as well, very difficult.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it when I saw the fist flying. It was deeply disappointing. Let's have a look at a positive story. This is the America's Cup. More innovation from Team New Zealand. Great to see a call for, or demand, is it, that there will be a youth team and a women's team in future races.
That's right. So there has been the Youth America's Cup going around for a few years now. It's always been seen as giving sailors the opportunity to sail in boats that are similar to what goes out in the water in the America's Cup, certainly foiling, and allows them to build that skill set, and also allows, let's be fair, the syndicates to see who's going good and maybe poach them and get them there, or use it to build up local talent to go along the way. It's a great initiative. There's also being set up now as a compulsory for the next America's Cup for syndicates to have a youth team and a women's team, as well as the team in the pinnacle event. Now this is seen as a positive step, and it should be, because they see it as a pathway for women to get into the America's Cup boats. We should point out that the only thing blocking that path right now is the people who choose to put people on the boats. There's no rules that stop it. There's nothing that says you can't have a woman in America's Cup team. We've seen in the past, Leslie Ignott, one of our greatest sailors. Of course, she skipped an all-woman crew back in 95, it was. And we've seen it happen. Let's talk about how the evolution's gone, the foiling and the like. We're seeing all these athletes on board. And I'd say athletes rather than sailors. You're looking at people like Stephen Ferguson has been on there in the part, in some of Van Veldhoven. We're seeing a lot of strong athletes who have been successful in other sports rather than sailors come on to be able to make this work. It's the people talking about the skill and experience and physicality required to be on those boats. So hopefully this new class, which will see them on the what has essentially been the America's Cup training boats, which were, if you ever saw any of those go, they fly. They still go particularly fast. So looking forward to seeing what that step up is, and hopefully it'll be a change in mentality for some to see some get some women selected, because there's some damn good ones out there. Sail GP, a racing series that's set up by Sir Russell Coutts from teams from around the world, including one the New Zealand team's got Blair Chook and Peter Burling. It's also got Liv McKay and Erica Dawson in it, as part of the initiative is that you need to have women in that squad as part of the development as well. So let's hope that these are steps that forward, Lynn, about being positive for it, about making change rather than being token. Look what we've got here.
Excited for the All Blacks for their next match. As you say, it's a match that usually we probably wouldn't put too much thought to.
Yeah, it's against Argentina, people kind of usually see it as fait accompli. We should point out that the last time these two met, last year, the Argentinians had their first ever win over New Zealand. It was away from home, which obviously this neutral venue certainly helps for that. And they managed to kind of ambush a tired and sluggish New Zealand team. Now, they'll be switched on, this New Zealand team, but I see the biggest problem for the All Blacks, Linus, and who on earth will they have as captain? They're missing so many through both injury and maternity leave, or paternity leave, I should say. Sorry, they support their wives as they're preparing for the birth of children. So we've got people in MIQ not quite in yet. There's a lot of factors, but basically they're running short on leaders, with the likelihood that current captain Artie Savia and Cody Taylor, another option, are both had head injuries that are being assessed from the weekend. You imagine there's a good chance both will miss out. So they've got to choose who the new captain will be. And there's some talk Beauden Barrett could be an option. He was a vice-captain last week, and same thing with Brady Retallick. But there's shows that leadership is missing, but the skill level is still there, the way that they're playing. For those who caught the ugly incident with Geordie Barrett getting a red card last week for a leap in the air with his boot stuck out that Marika Korobetti collected, he has had his red card offence rescinded, if you like, so he's not being punished with a suspension. He's able to play. So another example of some Sunday afternoon rugby as well. Just wonderful to watch professional athletes play in the daytime. I can't believe it's as rare as it is. I understand the appeal of nighttime and the box office and bums on seats for people around the country, around the world, to be able to be home after their day out to watch. But man, daytime rugby, nothing beats it. Just love it.
Sam, I had wanted to talk about the Australian cricket officials having to take a stance on playing against the Afghanistan if the Taliban stay with their plan to ban women. Can we do that next week? Because I think it's an important conversation, and I think it'll become an international conversation. I don't want to squeeze it in. So let's talk about that next week. Thank you so much. That's our sports commentator, Sam Ackerman.